What do I mean by emotional regulation and why is it so challenging? Emotional regulation, as I describe it, is the ability to be with your emotions, the comfortable ones and the uncomfortable ones, as they rise up in you and as they recede, and to be able to use your logic to become curious about what your emotions are communicating to you about your needs and your logic to respond in effective ways, because essentially that's what emotions are. The purpose of emotions is to communicate information to us about our needs. And the reason it's so challenging has to do with how our nervous system unconsciously impacts our behavior.
Welcome to Linda's Corner. My name is Linda Bjork, and today we're going to be talking about creating more peace in our homes through better parenting. I'm delighted to welcome Lara Reardon. Lara is a certified child behavior specialist who helps kids respond to big emotions. You can learn more about Lara at her website, larareardoncoaching.com, and I'll include a link in the show notes. Welcome, Lara. I'm so glad that you could join with me today.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. And I think this conversation is so important because I believe parenting is important. And I checked out your website and I loved the quote that, and I'm going to be paraphrasing, that parenting is not about perfection. It's about becoming the best person that we can be and helping our child become the best person that they can be. And that mission statement really resonated with me, because a lot of times when we're dealing with a difficult child, the first thing we want to say is, oh man, can somebody come fix this kid? And the real place of starting is with ourselves, with the parents. And so that's not very popular, but unfortunately it is true. So can you kind of work us through a little bit about how do I be a good parent and how do I deal with these big emotions?
Yeah, I think a really good starting place is to create a foundation of understanding of what do I mean by emotional regulation and why is it so challenging? And emotional regulation, as I describe it, is the ability to be with your emotions, the comfortable ones and the uncomfortable ones, as they rise up in you and as they recede, and to be able to use your logic to become curious about what your emotions are communicating to you about your needs, and your logic to respond in effective ways, because essentially that's what emotions are. The purpose of emotions is to communicate information to us about our needs. But the reason this can be so challenging to be with those emotions and to respond in effective ways, because that sounds great, right? But not so easy to do in real life, as we know. And the reason it's so challenging has to do with how our nervous system unconsciously impacts our behavior. And so what that means is when we're feeling comfortable feelings, our nervous system perceives safety. And those are the times in which emotional regulation comes naturally to us. It's those moments when we're able to be flexible. We feel calm. We're open to listening and learning and problem solving. We're able to act as our best selves. But when we're feeling uncomfortable feelings, our nervous system perceives danger because it doesn't know, it doesn't have the ability to decipher the difference between those uncomfortable sensations and emotions that we feel when we are faced with a life-threatening situation compared to those uncomfortable emotions that we feel in everyday life. And so, although this was an incredibly important and life-saving automatic response, unconscious and automatic response, both for our ancestors when physical threats were more common, but continues to be a life-saving response in today's day and age when we are faced with true danger. But in this day and age, more realistically, our fight, flight, or freeze response gets activated when we just experience those big emotions of everyday life. And so what that can look like in real life is it can look like our toddler being at a store and hearing the answer no to what they want, or our preschooler who has a new sibling arrive in their life, or our older kid has to turn off their video game because it's time to do homework, or for ourselves as parents, for example, maybe our kids are fighting. All of these everyday experiences can trigger really big emotions in us. And so instead of responding, you know, being with those uncomfortable emotions and responding in effective ways, it's our unconscious and automatic reaction to lash out or to shut down. So in our kids, you know, that can look like hitting, kicking, throwing, screaming, running away, laughing at us when we tell them to do something, or shutting down emotionally. And for ourselves as parents, it can look like, again, yelling, screaming, hitting, or it can look like telling our child to go away, or it can be shutting down emotionally or withdrawing physically from our child. So these are just examples of everyday experiences where it can be really challenging to respond in effective ways. And that's why. And so we can start in that place because it creates compassion. It creates compassion for ourselves as parents when we lose it. And it creates compassion for our children when they lose it. And we can recognize that although we can understand and have compassion for why it happens, we can recognize that when we respond in those ways, it's not effective. It creates or it escalates the conflict rather than resolves the conflict. And so we can learn new ways. And that's what I do. I help parents learn new ways to respond to their big emotions and learn new ways to, respond to their children's big emotions so that we can be responding in ways that build emotional regulation in our children.
Laura, this is amazing. And I am so delighted. You have given so many golden nuggets in such a tiny amount of time. It's like a treasure chest. So let's kind of go back and unpack and slow things down just a smidge, and then let's give some specific things. So one thing that you gave a definition of emotion that was so beautiful, that this is giving me information about what I need. We're going to stop. We're going to be a little bit curious about what it is. Rather than giving my knee-jerk what just naturally is coming, I'm going to pause and I'm going to be able to think, okay, there's a reason that I'm feeling this way. And this is physiological. This is part of my body's natural response. So I don't need to be ashamed that my body has a natural response, but I do need to become aware of it. And then to be able to put things into perspective. Is this really a life and death threat? Is my life really in danger? Or is it something else? Because those things that you mentioned, these everyday occurrences of being told, I have to turn off my video game, it's time to do homework, isn't actually life or death. But boy, it sure feels like it to the person who's involved. And the same thing with a parent when you're having issues with children. So recognizing where these feelings are coming from and what they're doing for us, oh, that's such an important step because then it can put things into perspective. It's like, oh, okay, there's a reason. Well, now let's take a look and go a little bit further. And I loved how you explained that we have the difference between if our body is feeling safe or if we are feeling threatened. And when we're feeling safe, that's when we can be a good parent. When things are going well, and when I feel like, I feel like I'm safe. But when I'm feeling those feelings of being threatened, which can come from a lot of different sources and not actual physical danger that I'm going to die, then I need to do something. I need to be even a little bit more in control and more aware so that I can respond in a way that is not making a mountain out of a molehill, that we're able to defuse the problem rather than throwing gasoline on the fire and just making it bigger. And isn't it interesting that our natural response when things are not going the way we want is either to be this authoritative, you will do blah, 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 and I will either use physical force or I'm going to use verbal assault, or I'm just going to freeze because this is our fight, flight, or freeze. And so, gosh, I really don't want my home to be a place of fighting and flighting and freezing. I would like it to be a place of love and harmony. So thank you for giving us a base, a foundation, an understanding so that we can build on it. So now let's talk about some responses, appropriate responses to some of those big feelings. And I think I better start with me as a parent. I'm mad. My kid is being a pain and I feel angry. What are some things that I can do to deal with my emotions so that I can respond in an appropriate manner?
There are three core steps that we can take as parents ourselves to set ourselves up for success in, you know, acting in emotionally regulated ways. And it starts with step one, which is our environment, creating an environment that meets our needs. Because if we think about the definition of our emotions as communicating information about to us about our needs, and if we understand that when we feel uncomfortable emotions, it can trigger our fight, flight, or freeze response, then it makes sense that creating an environment that meets our core needs, when we do that, we will be less likely to get triggered or activated into a fight, flight, or freeze response. So that's step one. You know, we can look at our core needs for things such as sleep, nutrition, hydration, connection, downtime. And, you know, there's, you know, it really depends, like everything, right? It's so personalized and everyone's situation is so unique. So I always recommend parents just start with those core needs.
So can we pause and expand on that for a second? I'm sorry. When you were talking about environment, my first thought was like my physical environment, like I need a bigger house or nicer, just kidding. But I wasn't that really sounds. That, but that's kind of what it sounded like. But yeah. It's about kind of another word might be self-care, that mm-hmm. I need to check in with myself. Did I get enough sleep? Have I eaten today? Did I remember to drink water? Have I remembered to move my body? How am I feeling? Am I sick? Am I tired? Am I exhausted? So we're talking some physical needs in me to see how I'm doing. And if I'm off, maybe that's a good place to start making some corrections to say, you know what? I think I need to go to bed an hour sooner. I'm a better parent if I get a little more sleep. I'm a better parent when I eat breakfast. I'm a better parent when I remember to drink water, things like that. So, okay, thank you. That matters so much. Okay, so that's what environment means. I'm improving this environment. Yeah, all right. Exactly. So do you have anything else on that, or do you want to go to number two?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just quickly, the additional thing I'd add on that is I know when my children are grown now, my daughter's 18 and a freshman in college. My son has graduated from college and living in his first apartment. But when my kids were younger, you know, I was that parent back in the day who wore that badge of honor for I always put my kids' needs first. And I thought that that was how you acted as the best possible parent that you could be. And now, of course, we understand that when we take care of our own needs, we're also taking care of the needs of the people around us. And so, you know, that can be a source of inspiration for, you know, doing what we can to add in some of that self-care. And yet, I'm also compassionate to the fact that parents today, in some ways, have the opposite experience of me. There's so many of us that are talking about self-care and the importance of self-care in being the best parent that you can be, the best person that you can be. And so, it can feel like an added pressure. It can feel stressful. It can feel overwhelming to be thinking about adding more to our day that already feels like we're in survival mode just to get through it. And so I think that, and also I'll add that for some parents, it feels like a privilege to have the time or the space to add in self-care to your day. And so I think that the most important self-care that we can offer to ourselves is, again, compassion, to recognize that if you're doing your best, that's always enough.
And doesn't that matter? That compassion can count as my self-care, that I am the kind of person who is kind to myself. And isn't that wonderful that when we do these things to care for ourselves, that it's not selfishness? It doesn't mean I'm putting my needs, that I don't care about my kids because I wanted to get an hour of sleep. It is that it is helping me become a better parent. So as I help me, it is helping them. So I really appreciate that there is, as you mentioned, more of an emphasis on this, that we maybe have more permission, if you could use that word. We have permission to take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And there is that expectation, of course, we want to be good parents, but that doesn't mean neglecting ourselves. And man, aren't you right that people are so busy. They're mm-hmm. so busy and they're tired mm-hmm. and they're doing the very best that they can. And so if we can just be kind to ourselves, If that's what we can do today, then we did it.
Yeah, well said.
Well done. Well, thank you for adding that clarification. All right, what's the second thing?
Yeah, so step two is an in-the-moment tool for when we are feeling triggered. And what's that? You know, when we talk about our environment, that's the proactive thing we can do to set ourselves up for success. But in the moment, when we're feeling triggered, I created a tool called the ABCs for keeping calm. And I'll just tick through it quickly. A is for awareness. You know, it all starts, of course, with awareness. We can practice becoming more aware of our internal world and when we're experiencing big emotions. Because when we have awareness, we have the opportunity to pause and make a different choice. But without awareness, again, our fight, flight, or freeze reaction can be an unconscious and automatic response. And so it takes intention to become more in tune with ourselves. And so it starts with awareness. And then once we become aware, like, okay, and we can also, it's also helpful to understand that emotions actually start as sensations in our body before they travel to our brain, where we can identify words to label them with. So we can also practice awareness of our internal world, not just in terms of our thoughts that we're having about how we're feeling, but actually how our body is feeling. And we all feel our emotions in our own unique way. So it's really about getting to know yourself. You know, for some of us, we feel a tightness in our chest. For others, it's in our throat or on our head or just tensed muscles. Stomach upset. It can look different for every person. It can, our emotions can live differently in our bodies. And so as we start tuning into our physical sensations, as well as our feelings, words, this can be a real head start in having that awareness, because this can move really quickly. And then once we do have that awareness, we can move to step B, which is breathe. You know, we can take that nice deep breath in and let our exhale be longer than our inhale. And sometimes it's one breath, and sometimes it's 10, and sometimes it's 20 minutes of deep breathing, depending on the particular situation. But it's deep breathing that can help us to tolerate our emotions. It's that thing, that tool that can help us be with our emotions as they rise up in us and as they recede. Now, for some people, breathing is really effective for them. I know it's effective for me, and for others, it's not effective. And so we can just consider, we can consider B as symbolic, you know, for whatever is helpful to allow you to be with your emotions without lashing out or shutting down. And then once we're calm enough that we can tune into our thoughts, we can go to step C, which is calm your thoughts. And we can, you know, again, kind of have compassion and acceptance for whatever our thoughts are. It can be our automatic reaction to have negative and judgmental thoughts. And again, that dates back to our ancestors, where it made sense for them to automatically, assume the worst. And that benefited their survival. For example, if they saw a stick and they assumed it was a snake, if they saw a tan rock in the distance and they assumed it was a tiger, that benefited the survival of the human race. And so to this day, it's our also automatic and unconscious reaction to go to negative thoughts, to go to judgmental thoughts. So again, for that reason, we can have compassion if we're thinking, my kid is mean, or if we're thinking I'm a bad parent, or if we're thinking, if we're having, thoughts that the worst case scenario will be the outcome, we can start with a foundation of, okay, makes sense. I think that way for sure. And then we can consider a calming thought. We can consider that, that parenting is really hard, and that it's getting it wrong that gets us on the path towards learning what we need to get it right. We can consider that our kid is not a mean kid, but our kid is experiencing big emotions and learning how to respond to those in more effective ways as their brain is developing and as they're learning. And we can consider, if we're having that catastrophizing thought, we can consider that everything is okay. So that's my quick in the moment tool to help us stay regulated when we're feeling like we're on the verge of losing it.
Oh, Lara, love it. Oh my goodness. This is so wonderful. And once again, I love how this is an integration of very much of our thoughts and our feelings and our body. A lot of times people think, you know, we have our physical health, we have our mental health, we have our emotional health, and all these things are completely separated in this, you know, little bento box. And the reality is everything is interconnected. There's a reason why we feel the way that we feel. There's a physiological reason. Mm-hmm. And so being able to make these connections and using that, those physical sensations to help us become aware. I love that. So here I am. I'm in a situation where maybe in the past I would have been ready to just blow up and I can feel, oh, I'm feeling tense. I'm feeling tight. I'm feeling these things. That can be to me a little wake up that says, oh, I am not feeling in control here. So now I can do something about it. I loved how you talked about there's proactive things that we can do with our self-care. Too late now. I'm in the moment. Now I have to deal with something. So I'm becoming aware I am not in a good place. So what can I do about it? And I love that you talk about breathing. Isn't that a wonderful, simple thing? And it's interesting that when when something happens scary, like you have a near miss on the freeway, a natural response for our body is a gasp. It is that quick intake of breath. And as you are aware, that quick intake of breath is signaling to our body, you're in danger. We're now turning on the fight and flight system. We're going to make all of those things happen. We're going to flood your body with cortisol and flip all the switches. And in order to get back into the relaxation response and turn back into that rest and digest, it is the opposite of that natural quick intake of breath. Mm-hmm. It is a slow exhale of breath. Mm-hmm. And that makes a physiological change in our bodies, and it signals the brain. It says, no, actually, we're okay. We're not in danger. And it takes a while sometimes for your brain to make that switch, but just that slow can help our bodies make that switch. And isn't it lovely that we have a switch that we can control to help us get back? So beautiful, beautifully done. Okay, so now I recognize that I'm feeling those tight, tight, angry feelings, but I'm choosing, instead of blowing up at my child, which is what I want to do, I'm going to breathe. And I'm going to consciously choose to be calm. And I think it's fascinating that all of these steps, you're not telling me what to do. You're not saying when your child does A, this is the proper response. Because in parenting, you really can't give A, if they do this, then you do that. There isn't a parenting manual that is that way. But what you're doing is helping me become my best self so that I can respond. Because there's nobody who knows my kid better than I do. There's nobody who loves my child more than I do. I just need to put myself in a good place mm-hmm. so that I can do the right thing rather than my knee-jerk reaction. Beautifully, beautifully done. Hey, so our first step was a proactive thing of let's take care of me. And we're just going to do the best we can. But when we're in the moment, we have something we can do. I love that. A, B, C. Beautiful, beautifully done. Thank you. This is good stuff.
Well, thank you for your input.
You have anything else?
Your beautiful way of reflecting on what I share. And I really enjoy hearing how you respond. A caveat, just as there was for, you know, creating an environment that supports our needs, we can also have that compassion for, you know, the fact that it learning to manage our emotions is a work for a lifetime. You know, and so we can think of this as, you know, slowly just moving in the direction towards becoming our best selves over the course of a lifetime. And so we can recognize that, especially in the early days, you know, it might be in that moment when our head hits the pillow, or when we wake up in the middle of the night or first thing in the morning, when we actually have a clear mind and we have maybe the first awareness of, oh, that's what was happening. And I didn't even think about it, but now I'm seeing it. And, you know, we can think of that as the first step of moving in this direction towards building our emotional regulation. So we can recognize that for some of us, emotional regulation comes more easily. For some of us, based on genetics and environment, it's going to be more challenging. And for all of us, most of us were not taught how to manage our emotions effectively. And so we can recognize, you know, we can start where we are and we can build step by step from there. And when we get it wrong, we can go to step three, which is to reflect. We can, when we lose it, we can reflect on what happened. We can reflect on perhaps what our emotions are communicating to us about our needs. And it may be information about our needs in the present moment. It may be that wake up call to, oh, maybe I need to go to bed an hour earlier, or maybe I need to create some space for me to move in the day. Or maybe I need to start my day by filling up that cup of water and knowing that it's just there and ready to go for the day. Or it could be that our big emotions are actually giving us information about our needs that were not met in the past. So for example, you know, if we grew up in a household where our emotions were not allowed, if our parents responded to our big emotions by lashing out or shutting down, then we learned that emotions are not safe. And so we're going to be really reactionary when our child experiences big emotions. It's going to be a big trigger for us because our unconscious world is going to immediately recognize emotions as dangerous, and our fight, flight, or freeze response will get activated more strongly and more quickly. So if we think that that might be happening for us, you know, we can create that time to reflect. If we want to, and if we feel safe to, we can reflect on our childhood. We can reflect on how emotions were treated in our own homes, how we felt about that, how we think it's showing up in our present life. And we can think about, you know, what our intention is, how we want to respond to our emotions in our new family. And so when we do that reflective work, it's the step in the direction of becoming free from having them, you know, your past impact your present. So we can do that reflective work. And then we can repair. You know, if we hurt our child, we can apologize. And when we apologize, it's one of the most powerful ways that we can teach our child emotional regulation, because life is not about getting it right. Life is about getting it wrong a lot more often than it is about getting it right. And so it teaches our child so many valuable lessons that when they get it wrong, they can, instead of, you know, reacting in defensive ways, we can role model for them taking responsibility for our behavior. We can role model having compassion for ourselves. You know, I got that wrong, and that's okay because I'm human and I'm learning and I'm trying. And when we respond in that way, we also teach a growth mindset, which is to respond to mistakes in a way that, instead of feeling shamed or shaming, we look at it as that's how we learn and grow, by making mistakes. And so we can feel empowered when we get it wrong, in knowing that it's reflecting and repairing that can be the most effective work of all that we do.
That is so beautiful. So we have a plan for before, during, and after when we have a situation. And I love that you use the word when we mess up, not if, because we're going to. And I really appreciate that you included apology and explaining how that it doesn't put us down in our children's eyes, like, oh, I'm supposed to be perfect. It actually raises us up as a role model of, oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, and it's okay. This is how I learn, and this is how I'm going to move forward. So I really appreciate that. That includes compassion for myself. And also, it means that I should use those same compassion ideas for my child. It's like, oh, you messed up. But that's okay, because this is how we learn. So it's, we make mistakes, but we repair them. So we make corrections. That's so beautiful. I feel like this is such useful information. So this is helping me. Is there something I can do to help my child? I mean, my kid is yelling at me, swearing at me, just being mean. What do I do?
Yeah, well, like for ourselves, it starts with environment. We can also proactively set our child up for success in managing their emotions by making sure their core needs are being met. And for our kids, as for ourselves, you know, those core needs like sleep and nutrition and hydration and movement and connection and downtime. And also for kids, play is so important in giving kids an opportunity to, you know, have that time to connect with themselves, really. And the way I would correlate to parents, it's comparable to for ourselves as parents, when we create time to do that thing in which we lose time, you know, in which we enjoy it so much that we just are so present to the moment. And that's what play can be for what play is for children. And so that's so important. And also an in the moment tool, you know, and it's not really so much a tool as a way of thinking about it. And I love the way you talked about, we can, you know, we can do things to put ourselves in a position to, you know, be able to act as our best selves. And so essentially what you're talking about is emotional regulation, because when we're emotionally regulated, that's when we're biologically capable of acting as our best selves, you know, again, being calm and flexible and open to listening and learning and problem solving. And that's essentially the three steps that I talked about for ourselves as parents, you know, support us in being able to act as our best selves, support us in growing and building our emotional regulation. Well, we can do the same for our kids. So when we're in that moment where our kid is acting out, where our kid is lashing out, or our kid is shutting down, the very most important thing that we can do is recognize it as dysregulation as compared to recognizing it as misbehavior.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can respond in a way that helps our child return to emotional regulation. Because when we understand that when our kid is dysregulated, they're biologically incapable of acting in the ways that we want for them to act, then we can recognize that when we respond to our child in a way that helps them feel physically and emotionally safe, they will have the capacity to return to a regulated state in which it will come naturally to them to act in all of those beautiful ways that we want for them to. So when we respond in that way, two things happen. That's the first thing that happens, that we support their ability to respond to their, be with their emotions and respond to them in effective ways. But also, that's the most effective way for them to grow their emotional regulation, because children are not born with the ability to manage their emotions effectively. They're born with all of their emotions fully intact, but the part of their brain that's in charge of responding to their emotions in effective ways, which is called the prefrontal cortex, is not fully developed until their mid-20s. And also, as I mentioned, for ourselves as adults, individual differences. For our kids who are deeply feeling kids, for our kids who have a diagnosis of, for example, ADHD or autism or sensory sensitivities, emotional regulation is going to be more challenging, and it's going to take more time to develop. So we can recognize, you know, a lot of times people talk about teaching emotional regulation by teaching tools. But it's so important to understand that until our kid's brain is developed such that emotional regulation is developed in their brain, they don't have the ability to pause and consider that tool and then put that tool into place. So they go straight to that unconscious and automatic reaction. So although teaching tools is a really, you know, wonderful thing, we cannot expect our child to use those tools until their emotional regulation is developed. So it's the opposite. We think of that as building their emotional regulation, but it doesn't. What builds their emotional regulation is co-regulation. And co-regulation is exactly what I described. It's recognizing our kids' behavior as dysregulation, recognizing they are not biologically capable of regulating their emotions in that moment. And so helping them to do it, co-regulating, helping them to return to a regulated state until they're able to do it on their own. And that's, that is a type of learning called embodied learning, which means instead of learning it with our mind, we're feeling it inside of our body. And that is the most effective way to wire their brain to support the development of emotional regulation. So again, responding in that way has that twofold effect, the short-term effect of supporting them in their ability to respond in effective ways, which is what we want, and the long-term impact of building their emotional regulation so that one day they can do that on their own.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Mm-hmm. And it does put a lot of burden on parents because they're not... I guess we can't be surprised that they can't do what their brains have not been developed to do properly. So that requires some extra patience on our end. Darn it.
And yet, I will share two things on that. I will say that our culture teaches us the importance of independence. We really value independence. And so I can share a painful story that also, I have compassion for myself and I recognize it is getting it wrong is how I learned to get it right and all of that. But I still remember a day when my daughter was, I really don't know, but let's say somewhere between 8 and 10. And I remember her looking at me and saying, "Mom, I really need you to help me calm down." And I remember, it's like I have to force myself through this story because it's so hard for me to say. And I remember looking at her and saying, "No, it's your job to learn how to calm down on your own." Now, I thought I was being the best possible parent to her. I thought that that was the most effective way I could help her in that moment because I didn't know better. And most of us don't know this. This learning is based on the latest research in neuroscience. This is not what they were teaching when I was going to parenting classes. And this is still brand new information that we're just starting to get out to parents. And so, so we can recognize that our culture values independence. And yet we can recognize as well that what neuroscience teaches us is that, and I'll step back for a moment, because I think what we're afraid of as a culture is that if we help our kid calm down, they're going to become dependent on us to calm down. And it's our job to teach them how to calm down independently so they can grow up to be people who can manage their emotions. So it's all very logical and it all makes sense. And it's what we're taught. But what neuroscience teaches us about how our brain actually works, our brain and body work together, is that in fact, it's co-regulation that does develop the emotional regulation. And so we can feel the release of that burden and that worry that if we help our kid that we're not doing right by them. And we can also, what can be helpful, because I know another thing I did as a parent, which I also hear a lot from other parents, is we think it's our job to respond in the moment in a way that the next time they'll get it right. We teach that tool, next time I know this is what I did. I started with the consequences and the rewards and the ignoring unwanted behaviors. And then I figured out why those things didn't work. And then I moved to teaching tools and I would expect, I would teach that tool and I would expect that the next time my kid would get it right. And when they didn't, I would wonder what's wrong with them and what's wrong with me. But with this information, it can actually, in some ways, take some burden away from us because I have so many parents that come to me, in such angst over, my kid keeps getting it wrong. And when we can change our definition of success from, "Oh, my kid got it right the next time," to simply, "I was present to my child in that moment in a way in which they felt safe emotionally and physically with their big emotions. And I helped them return to a state in which they were able to, feel calm again." When we look at the definition of success as that, that can actually take a lot of the pressure off. And I recognize, you know, that can, you know, and I'm happy to talk about a specific example because I know I'm talking really high level here, and this just looks different in every situation and for each individual child in terms of, you know, how you do that. But in some ways that can take the burden off of us. It's not our job to respond in ways that gets our kid to act perfectly the next time. It's just our job to be present to them in a way that recognizes, in a way that communicates verbally or nonverbally, you're not a bad kid because you're acting this way. You are a good kid who is learning and growing, and I am here for you.
And that matters. So thank you, Mara. This has been just amazing. Is there anything else you just want to make sure that we cover before we close today?
You know, I think that the most important thing that I will close with is the message that I've communicated throughout our conversation, which is compassion. I think that really what I teach is everything is rooted in compassion for ourselves. When we're not getting it right, you know, we're not a bad parent. We are struggling with big emotions and we're learning and growing. And when our kid's not getting it right, they're struggling with big emotions and they're learning and growing. And if we can practice, again, it's a journey, when we can practice replacing judgment and shame with compassion, with responding in a way that someone feels seen and understood. Again, they're not a bad kid. They're a good kid who's learning and struggling. Then I just think that is the most important message of all.
Thank you. That is excellent. And thank you for visiting with me today. This has been delightful.
Thank you for having me. It was truly a pleasure having a conversation with you.
In closing, I'd like to share a quote by pediatric surgeon C. Everett Koop. He said, "Life affords no greater responsibility, no greater privilege than the raising of the next generation." For our listeners who have that great responsibility of parenting, I invite you to create more peace in your home by strengthening your parenting skills and emotional regulation. See you next time on Linda's Corner.
Thanks for listening. Please share and subscribe to help us reach new listeners. And if you'd like to heal your life from the inside out, there is a free video series at hopeforhealingfoundation.org. Just click on the free stuff tab. I also invite you to grab a copy of one of my books, like Crushed, A Journey Through Depression, and You Got This, an action plan to calm fear, anxiety, worry, and stress. See you next time on Linda's Corner.